By sacrifices of animals, ordinary human beings will worship you gorgeously with various paraphernalia, because you are supreme in fulfilling the material desires of everyone. Purport. As stated in Bhagavad Gita 7:20, Kamaistaisthirti Jnana Prapadyantena Devata, those whose minds are distorted by material desires, similar to demigods. Therefore the word manusya, meaning human being, here refers to one who does not know the actual goal of life. Such a person wants to enjoy the material world by taking birth in a highly elevated family with the benefits of education, beauty, and immense wealth, which in this material world are desirable. One who has forgotten the real aim of life may worship Goddess Durga, Maya Shakti, under various names for different purposes and in different places. As there are many holy places for the worship of Krishna, there are also many holy places in India for the worship of Durga Devi or Maya Devi, who took birth as the daughter of Yasoda. After cheating Kamsa, Maya Devi dispersed herself to various places, especially in Vindhyachala, to accept regular worship from ordinary men. A human being should actually be interested in understanding Atma Tattva, the truth of Atma, the spirit soul, and Paramatma, the supreme soul. Those who are interested in Atma Tattva worship the supreme personality of Godhead. Yasmin vidyate sarvam evam vidyatam bhavati. However, as explained in the next verse of this chapter, those who cannot understand Atma Tattva, apasyatam Atma Tattvam, worship Yoga Maya in her different features. Therefore, Srimad Bhagavatam 2.12 says, Sota vyadi arilachendra, niriyam sinti sahasra saha, apasyatam Atma Tattvam, grihesu grihamedinam. Those persons who are materially engrossed, being blind to the knowledge of the ultimate truth, have many subject matters for hearing in human society, O Emperor. Those who are interested in remaining in this material world and are not interested in spiritual salvation have many duties. But for one who is interested in spiritual salvation, the only duty is to surrender fully unto Krishna. Sarvadharma parichaya mamekam sarvam raja. Such a person is not interested in material enjoyment. Translation again. By sacrifices of animals, ordinary human beings will worship you gorgeously with various paraphernalia, because you are supreme in fulfilling the material desires of everyone. So in this verse, he finds a description of the worship of Durga Devi, who is the deity who is controlling the material energy. In India, this verse would still have relevance to what is taking place. There are still many, many people who are worshipping Durga as the supreme deity. We've also seen that many temples started off with worshipping deities of the supreme lords, Lord Vishnu, and having a small altar on the side with the deity of Durga Devi, and then gradually with time shifting, the main altar became the deity of Durga and Narayana or Lord Vishnu moved to the side. A similar thing could be seen in Calcutta in that temple where Srila Prabhupada worshipped the Radha Govinda deity in his childhood. That at a later stage in his life, when Prabhupada went back, the deity had been shifted, had been moved upstairs, and then downstairs in the courtyard where the deity used to be worshipped was now a deity of Durga. So, certainly, as the age of Kali is progressing, there will be more and more interest in materialistic type of worship. In the Western world, though, we are wondering what is the relevance of these kind of verses describing that ordinary human beings will worship Durga Devi by sacrificing animals. we are not having such kind of worship prominently going on in the Western world. Rather, people are totally engrossed in materialistic activities. And it seems that these verses are not immediately relevant, but rather that we should be preaching against atheism. In the same way, we also see that Srila Prabhupada himself, in the early days of this movement, Kirtananda was asking Prabhupada, why are you making such an issue out of Madhat about impersonalism in the Western world? Why not preach against atheism? I mean, it seems to be much more relevant. And Prabhupada's answer was simply, you're saying that because you are Mayavadi. So the influence of impersonalism is widely spread throughout the world. And in fact, many times better, are those who worship the demigods over those who are not worshipping any deity at all. At least in India, those who are worshipping the forms of Durga, they are at least connecting to a deity, and in that way, at least cultivating some concept of personalism. Of course, there is a type of worship called Panchopasana, and this Panchopasana type of worship is basically referring that there are five different types of deities: Durga, Surya, Ganesh, Lord Shiva, and Lord Vishnu. But in Panchopasana, they are worshipping these various deities as manifestation of the impersonal absolute, and they consider that these forms and manifestations are only temporary. So this is false. This is to be rejected. And in this way, the worship of the demigods is also connected to impersonalism. We can understand that as a side effect of the Sankirtan movement, we can also expect that the worship of demigods will also come up in the Western world. Although today it may not have so much relevance as yet, but as this movement is spreading more and more all over the world, we will see that all the weaknesses and deviations that exist within Vedic culture will also start manifesting here, because the same human tendencies are there. Demigod worship is the type of worship for those whose knowledge has been stolen by material desires, as Krishna states in Bhagavad Gita, Kamais Taiste Dityana Prapadite Anyadevata. So when people are under the influence of material desires, then the worship of the demigods becomes very tempting, because it can give immediate benefits. And it may start small. It may start small with a little worship of Ganesh, which even in our movement now is making its entrance. But the acharyas have pointed out there is no need. Srila Narottama Thakur said, but anya devas raya nai. There is no need to take shelter of any other deva, of any other deity, not to take away any obstacles on the path of devotional service or for any purpose whatsoever, because all purposes can be fulfilled by Krishna. And what may start very innocently may later on cause some deviation. The reason is the seed principle. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, we find a description of the Bhakti Lata Beach and how one who receives the Bhakti Lata Beach due to some good fortune should plant that seed of devotional service in his heart. And upon planting the seed within the heart, one should water it by hearing and chanting. Sravana Kirtana Jala Sacham. And subsequently, from the seed, a creeper will grow. Then it is also described that along with the creepers of devotional service, along with the creeper of devotional service, there will be other creepers that simultaneously will grow. So this is actually what is taking place. That when one is worshipping the demigods, even if one is doing it to take away obstacles in spiritual life, still one is shifting his faith. And this shifting of faith towards some demigods, instead of keeping all one's faith with Krishna, will grow. It is like a seed that will grow into a creeper, where one will always have that tendency, again, to look for more support, external support in Krishna consciousness. But it is explained that the creeper of bhakti is not depending on anything. Although, generally speaking, a creeper grows on a tree, or on a wall, or on some form of support, this creeper of bhakti does not require any support. There is nothing in this material world that can support bhakti, because bhakti is totally transcendental and depends on bhakti itself. It is not part of the external energy. Therefore, the external energy, or the material energy, cannot really create favorable conditions for spiritual life. Of course, the three modes of material nature are there within this material world, and of these three modes of material nature, the mode of goodness is closer to Krishna than the mode of ignorance. Within the mode of ignorance, one is engaged in uber karma, in horrible work that is meant to destroy the world. Whereas in the mode of goodness, one is engaging in work that is favorable for cultivating transcendental knowledge. But still, there is no guarantee for one who is in the mode of goodness that he will be able to maintain that position. Just as the demigods who are offering prayers to the Lord within this chapter are very pious living entities who are predominantly in the mode of goodness. It is said that the atmosphere in the heavenly planets is predominated by the mode of goodness, whereas the atmosphere in our planet is predominated by the mode of passion, by the desire to enjoy. So the demigods are very much inclined to accept principles of regulation, principles of purification, which are all part of the mode of goodness. And even if they do look for sense gratification, they are always doing so in a proper prescribed way. Whereas this is the planet where, due to the influence of passion, the enjoyment looks too good to resist. And here we go again, deviating from standards that we know we should follow, but what to do. This is the principle of passion. So, people are under the influence of the different modes of material nature, and certainly if one is in the mode of goodness, there is more opportunity to find out about the Supreme Lord. But pure devotional service is a process which one must receive through the mercy of Guru and Krishna. It is not a process that one can simply figure out on his own. Through the process of speculation, one may realize the impersonal Brahman, but one can never, through speculation, realize the existence of Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That is only possible whenever Krishna reveals itself. Dhamam tu satsat bhagavat pranitam. So, transcendental knowledge is made available by the mercy of Krishna and his pure devotee. So Lord Krishna, it is said, is impartial. He is equally disposed towards all living beings, and he extends his mercy to all of them, whether they are in the lower modes or in the higher mode, in the mode of goodness. Everyone equally gets opportunities to receive the mercy of Krishna, and Krishna makes many, many arrangements to make his mercy available within the universe. So Krishna in that way is impartial. And of course it is explained that just as rain, when it is falling on water or on rock or on land, will have a different result. In the same way, when the mercy of Krishna descends in this world and will be received by those who are in the different modes of material nature, it will be received in a different way. But the mercy of Krishna is equally available for all. However, it is particularly the devotee that becomes partial. The devotee becomes partial to the conditioned souls. The devotee makes distinction. A devotee is, unlike Krishna, not omniscient. Krishna is omniscient. Krishna knows every single living entity in the material world. But a devotee is seeing certain living entities, and therefore he can recognize that some living entities are in a predicament that one can understand, that one can relate to, that one can remember from his own previous conditioning, from his own previous experience, and one can see this person is going through something similar to what I was going to. And in this way, especially a devotee can be inclined to feel compassion in a personal way and try to make a special endeavor to give the mercy to all. This age is the age of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the age of special mercy. It is mentioned in the Chaitanya Charitamrita that Lord Chaitanya has simply smiled upon this universe, and especially on this planet. And since Lord Chaitanya has smiled, suddenly everything has changed within the universe. Nobody knows why, but somehow or other, because of that smile, everyone is very much attracted to transcendental knowledge. So although it is the age of Kali, and everyone is deeply engrossed in sense gratification and illicit activities, and is totally fallen and degraded, and so forth, at the same time, for some reason or other, there is this interest for spiritual life just under the surface, because of the smile of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. It is especially there. So in this way, Lord Chaitanya's mercy is very, very great. And Lord Chaitanya made all kinds of arrangements to distribute this mercy. Lord Chaitanya, unlike Lord Krishna, was not just impartial. Lord Chaitanya was also partial. Lord Chaitanya was making special endeavors to deliver all. When Lord Chaitanya came to Banaras, he wanted to deliver the Mayavadis, and after he converted Prakasananda, Saraswati Goswami, and all his followers, Lord Chaitanya mentioned that, "I came to this place and I thought I would have to leave, and I thought that nobody would be interested to take the mercy. Therefore, I just decided to give it away without any price, right? Because I felt I can't take it back." And he just gave it away without any price. So there, he became partial. Lord Chaitanya decided, like, well, I will not wait for the living entity to take the mercy which I've made available to all, but as one is surrendering, the mercy becomes available. No, even to those who don't surrender, it will be made available. So like this, Lord Chaitanya's mercy is extraordinary. And yet it is said that Lord Nityananda is still more merciful than Lord Chaitanya. One of the principal reason for that is because Lord Nityananda is always engaged in the service of Lord Chaitanya. And being engaged in the service of Lord Chaitanya, Lord Nityananda is experiencing great transcendental ecstasy. In fact, he becomes so much overwhelmed by the ecstasy of love of God that he becomes drunk. He becomes like intoxicated. And because he is so totally drunk with love of God, he cannot see clearly anymore. So therefore, when Lord Nityananda looks upon the conditioned souls, he can't figure it out. Is this one devotionally inclined? Is this one totally sinful? Lord Nityananda is just too ecstatic to even consider that, and therefore just think, well, it moves, let's give it mercy. Okay? In fact, that statement would be incorrect, because it said that by the mercy of Lord Nityananda, even stones melt. So even that which doesn't move also melts and also receives the mercy of love of God. So we see how amazing this process is and how amazing their lordships Gornitaya are. Lord Chaitanya became Mali Chaitanya. He became a transcendental gardener who had planted the desire tree of pure devotional service and was harvesting the fruits of love of God from this transcendental tree. And then he said that there are so many fruits and how can I distribute them alone? Of course, we know that that statement is a false statement, because the Lord could obviously distribute them alone, because the Lord can do anything or everything, and there was nothing really barred the Lord from distributing all this mercy by himself. So when Lord Chaitanya says that he could not distribute all these fruits of love of God alone, he was becoming merciful at that stage. He was simply speaking for the benefit of the conditioned souls. He was simply speaking that, all right, you come and help me, you must. What can I do alone? Although he really doesn't require any help. Therefore, the real benefit is not so much that Lord Chaitanya needed the help of anyone to push on the Sankirtan mission. That is not required. But rather the benefit is for those who partake in the Sankirtan mission. They can get so much mercy of the Lord for this purpose. There's a description in the Nectar of Devotion which describes the incident of Drupadi as she was in the assembly of the Kurus and about to be disrobed. And then at one stage, she let go of the sari. First she was holding on, but then she just let go, threw her arms in the air, and called out the name of Krishna by calling out, "Hey Govinda." She called out for the shelter of Krishna, "Hey Govinda." And it says that when she called out, "Hey Govinda," that Krishna immediately felt very much indebted by just hearing that she took shelter of him and called out for his shelter. So Krishna felt inclined towards her and was trying to repay it somehow or other, to respond. But the most wonderful thing is that, okay, Krishna supplied the sari and it was an unlimited length and Drupadi's honor was saved and so forth. But that was not the end of the effect
of her calling out the name of Krishna. Because it said that Krishna, even much later, would time and time again remember that incident. And he would remember how Draupadi called out his name. And each time when he remembered how much he felt indebted that she was taking shelter of him. And by remembering that, he felt even more indebted. So each time Krishna remembers some service that has been done by a devotee, Krishna is remembering, that was so nice, how nice. And then he's remembering it again later on. That was really so nice, how nice. So in this way, Krishna's feeling of gratitude and indebtedness to the devotee is increasing and increasing and increasing and increasing. Yeah, so when I read this, I was thinking, wow, this is really quite something. This is quite amazing. And it is certainly so that within our movement, it works in the same way. We are seeing that devotees who somehow or other made a sacrifice for Krishna at one point, who did something very, very difficult. We have seen in some dealings with certain devotees that Krishna never forgets. Krishna never forgets. Krishna remembers. And even if the devotee involved forgets Krishna, still Krishna remembers him. And some devotees that had at one stage in their life made a great, great sacrifice for Krishna and then were deviated and just somehow or other fell in Maya. And some of them even, due to circumstances, became ill and became deadly ill. And we saw that at the end of their life, by some arrangement of Krishna, they were either allowed to remember Krishna, to get again great association of devotees, or to go to the holy dharma and leave their bodies in this way, because Krishna never forgets and Krishna makes arrangements. Therefore, it is difficult. It is very difficult to surrender. It's easy to say, it's easy to preach, it's easy to tell, surrender, 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 but it's very hard to do. And time is to remain fixed up in time is the most austere. It is certainly austere to somehow or other surrender in devotional service today. It's not going to be easy, right, to somehow or other make a sacrifice. But a sacrifice that lasts in time is still much more difficult. It is much greater. That is the ultimate test, to last for a lifetime. Somehow or other, to last for a lifetime. That's not so easy. But every little moment that we are surrendering now, that surrender today, it will benefit our entire lifetime. Because it attracts the mercy of Krishna. Devotional service is never a mechanical process. Just last week, I was in one temple, and it was a local devotee who was very scholarly, who reads many, 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 many books, and he came up with a quote from some Purana, where it said that if you chant, I forgot now the exact number, but it said if you chant so many lakhs of names for a fixed number, he gave a very large fixed number, if one chants that number of names, one will get liberation. So he wanted to know what I thought about it. So what I think about that is that verse, I don't know where he found it, that verse is not very relevant to us. We are not interested in liberation. Who cares for liberation? Yes, maybe by chanting a fixed number of rounds, one may get liberation. because maybe liberation can be attained through a mechanical process. But the chanting of the holy name is never meant to be a mechanical process. Devotional service is not a mechanical process. It is not that if we chant so many names every day for so many years that automatically then we'll get all the mercy, but rather it is a matter of attracting Krishna. Devotional service is a personal process, and it is a process which is based on attracting the attention of Krishna. And somehow or other, when we attract the attention of Krishna, then the more Krishna develops a feeling of indebtedness for all the service that the devotee has done, the more Krishna's mercy will descend upon that particular devotee. So this is actually how devotional service works. It works simply on that principle. Somehow or other, let's do something. Something to attract the mercy of Krishna. Then, what does it mean anyway, the mercy of Krishna? Ultimately, the mercy of Krishna means that Krishna will reveal himself. And ultimately, the mercy of Krishna will be that Krishna will allow the devotee to reside in his association. That's the ultimate mercy of Krishna. Although a devotee may sometimes pray, Janmani Janmani Svare Bhavatat Bhakti Rahit Kitvai, just engage me life after life in your devotional service. I have no desire to even go back to Godhead. I even stay in this material world for your pleasure, and even in separation of you, I will serve. But still, Krishna is not leaving it at that. Right? Krishna may allow a devotee for some time to serve in separation within this material world, but then it says in the Chaitanya Charitamrita that Krishna knows the desire in the heart of hearts of a devotee. And he knows that even when that devotee prays, my Lord, just engage me birth after birth in your devotional service, that deep in his heart, he has a desire to associate with Krishna. And therefore, Krishna takes even that devotee who prays, let me stay in this material world for your service, even that devotee, he takes back to the spiritual world, because Krishna knows in his heart he actually wants to be in my association. So I'll bring him back. So this is what is meant when it is said that Krishna even fulfills more desires than we are even aware of. Krishna even fulfills the deep and hidden desires within our hearts, even if we ourselves are not fully conscious of certain desires within our heart. Krishna is, and Krishna will fulfill all. And that is the nature of Krishna consciousness. Therefore, there is no need to again become influenced by the mentality of ordinary human beings who are described in this verse, who are interested in getting material benedictions. We need not worry about material desires. We must know that certainly Krishna will fulfill all desires. He will totally fulfill our entire heart. Nothing will remain unfulfilled. Although in our present stage in Krishna consciousness, we may be unfulfilled because we are not on the platform of love of God. So until one has reached that platform of perfection, one cannot expect to be totally fulfilled. And there will be certain concerns and desires which plague us and which will harass us and follow us and which will cause doubt, which will address themselves to us again and again, from why not satisfy them also? Why not satisfy them also? You can serve Krishna, but why suppress your nature? Why not just also do the things you like? Why not both? So it is certainly a fact that Krishna consciousness is not a process of negation, and that pleasing Krishna does not mean that one must do all the things that are not pleasurable. Like Satsarupa Maharaj is describing that on the first Sunday feasts, Prabhupada used to personally cook those feasts, and they were total nectar. And then Prabhupada would serve again and again, he would serve second ecstasy. Those feasts. So sometimes we think that when we deny ourselves all kinds of pleasures, that this will be pleasing to Krishna. That's also not pleasing to Krishna. But the real thing is that somehow or other, what pleases Krishna the most is that we distribute his mercy, is that we give Krishna consciousness to others. And that has to remain somewhere it has to remain the essence of our life. And when that stays the central focus in our life, then it will rain mercy upon us. Then there is no doubt how much mercy we will get. And even if our devotional service is imperfectly executed, in Amsterdam, there was some years back, there was a devotee who was quite unusual in the sense that he was very bold. He was a very bold preacher. But at the same time, he had many problems in following the four regulative principles. He would sometimes leave and then, be lying again and then, what to do. But although he would sometimes break the principles and leave the temple, he was always preaching. He kept on preaching. That he never stopped. He went to the European community and he hit them up for big donations for Food for Life. And he got them. He got a house, they gave him a building, they gave him vehicles, he got a grant, he got so many things. He went to the big director of the big national shopping chain of large warehouses, and he just walked into the man's office and said, "I checked out your book department and I've noticed that you don't have the books of A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada." He said, "Why not? You should have those books. I mean, they're really good, and your selection is just not complete without them." So the director said, "I like you. You've got guts, you know." He said, "Nobody ever walked into my office like that. I appreciate that." And he said, "I'll do it, just because you came to my office." And like that, then all the books were placed into the in all the warehouse chains all over the country. So he was a real dynamic preacher. But because he wasn't following the four regulated principles always, at one stage he caught AIDS. Oh, well, that can happen these days, especially in places like Amsterdam or Sydney. There you have lots of opportunities for that. So he got it. And, I lived in India in those days. But at one stage I was traveling around and I was coming to the West and I heard that his AIDS had really progressed now, and they told me he's in his very, very last days, he's in the hospital. So I thought, okay, I'll go and visit him. So I went there, and when I came to the hospital, boy, I was at bed. He had some type of terrible pneumonia, and he was coughing, and a ball came out of his mouth, of mucus as big as a tennis ball. Big ball. So I saw that ball come back. I said, "Oh God, this is totally hell." And then he coughed and I just covered my mouth. I hope I'm not going to get this. Whatever it is, you know. But then he said that, I like your kirtan. I said, "Thanks. Can you
what could I say? I wasn't planning to go to the funeral, but I had to say yes, right? So I said, okay, yeah. So I had to wait till he died. I waited. I was supposed to leave the country, but I didn't leave. Anyway, it didn't take so long. He died. So then went to the funeral, and it was actually a cremation. And in Holland, the system is they have these, they have the box on a stage, and then the chairs go up like in an amphitheater, and everyone's looking down on that box. And you know, they have like one of those little tables for someone to stand and speak. So someone was reading a letter of the devotee that had left his body. And in the letter it said that, well, you have all come for my funeral and you all think I'm dead. I have news for you. I'm not dead. I'm still alive. Yeah. But, okay, this body has now dropped. It was worn out anyway. So I'm moving on. But, so there's no need to feel depressed or very sorry. I'm okay. I'm fine. Don't worry. He said, now, you've all gathered here and you're all different types of people from different walks of life. And now I'd like to ask you one thing today. Since you are all my friends, I would like it that all my friends appreciate each other no matter how different they are, on this day at least. Yeah. So now, within a few minutes, someone from the Hare Krishna movement will come forward and he will start singing the famous Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, you know that song. So, what I want is that on my funeral, everybody is here, sings along with it. And not just a little bit, but, you know, with some little enthusiasm, okay? Get into it. And he said, after that, you can go to the temple and you can take prasadam there also. A big feast, vegetarian feast, very nice, in my honor. You must take it. He wrote that letter. It was a great letter. And so after that, it was my turn. Okay, I was leading the kirtan. Very simple, just Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. And there was this, everyone was chanting, and they had to do it, because he told them, you have to get into it. So there was this one lady, you know, she was well built, like that, huge, right? And she was chanting, Hare Krishna! Full opera voice, and it's there. And the whole thing was just building up, you know. I mean, the kirtan was getting more and more intense. They all got into it, like it was going for almost half an hour. And then there was a signal that I was supposed to stop. That was agreed that on the signal I would stop. So on the signal, I stopped, and then they pushed a button, and then the box began to sink within the stage. This is like, to make it more dramatic, they let the box slowly sink into the stage. And at that stage, at that point, they turned on the Govindam tape. So that light just went in there, and all the people, they just cracked, you know, because it's such a deep emotional song, right, that everyone just... Oh, people fell in each other's arms and started crying, and it was a whole thing. And you know, afterwards, people said, oh, God, I've never been in a funeral like this. I mean, this is just inconceivable. And about, there were 300 people on that funeral because he knew a lot of people, and it was really packed. And I think about 200 came to the temple for prasadam, including his parents. And in this way, he did so much preaching still, even after he had died. So I'm sure that for this he received so much mercy of Lord Chaitanya. I don't know what mercy, in what form it came, but if he took birth again, I'm sure it, in the next life, Krishna will help him to conquer his material desires and to get more absorbed into his preaching. So this is really how, in this age, we get the heart of Krishna, and that is our business. I'm going too long for questions. I'm sorry about that, but the story was too good to stop in the middle. So, therefore, I'll stop and save the questions for some other time. Sorry about that. Srila Prabhupada.